Happy Friday Eve, everybody. Another great Thursday, the day before Friday. I always get excited on Thursday because Friday's like a lay low day for me. I mostly work from home and I get to just relax and do some things. Tomorrow's Friday. Actually, tomorrow I have to go to my daughter's school. They're doing this wax museum thing where they all had to be, I believe, a presidents or notable people. And my daughter had to memorize like this 7-card speech with this whole display, and she has to dress up as Thomas Jefferson tomorrow. So I get to go to the school and listen to her recite a bunch of facts about Thomas Jefferson. So I guess that's pretty cool. It's better than going to the school and seeing them all dressed in drag reading, you know, porn books and stuff. So I'll give it to my kids' school there. They're doing all right so far. Listen, if you have not been here before, Great Divide Podcast. I'm Alan Jacoby. Make sure you're following on Rumble, 1776live.tv. We're on Facebook. We're on Getter. We're on Rumble, of course. YouTube hates me. And make sure you're following on Twitter, Alan Jacoby, 1776. Got out of Twitter jail today, the day after National Women's Day. And if you didn't hear last night, I was actually put in Twitter jail for 7 days for telling a woman, I think it was a woman who was attacking me. I said, get back in the kitchen where you belong. And apparently that's hate speech on Twitter. Very misogynistic, whatever. And that's what landed me in Twitter jail. It is what it is. Anyway, hit the share button on Facebook if you're on there. Facebook has been horrible. And again, who knows how long I'll be on there because they just keep shadow banning the hell out of me. So we got a lot going on. You know, this Afghanistan evacuation that nobody's really talking about anymore, that we lost 13 service members. And it's coming out really today. I mean, we knew that this was all just a big botch job and a horrible situation and a failure, a miserable failure of an evacuation. It was done poorly. I mean, we left, what was like, $7+ billion of military technology and equipment behind to the Taliban that now have it. They're flying our Blackhawks, riding around in our tanks, our armored vehicles, have all this technology. It's just clown world. And of course, you know, the current DOD leadership, the Joint Chiefs, the Secretary of Defense, and all the way up to the old bag of wind in the Oval Office himself, they're all to blame, and they all have blood on their hands. We saw that horrific display when Joe Biden was literally sitting there with his mask on, standing there as they were taking 13 bodies out of, I think, a C-130, the caskets, and he checked his watch. And there was so much around that. Like, oh, I really wasn't checking his watch. The guy was checking his watch. The president of the United States, 13 family members, the 13 family members had to sit there and watch their 13 loved ones be taken off in caskets that were just killed in a horrific suicide bombing, which now after the unbelievable congressional hearing, I believe that was this morning, when I have it, we're gonna listen to it. It's almost 10 minutes long, but I think it's really important to listen to the testimony of the actual Marine sergeant, the Marine sniper by the name of Tyler Vargas Andrews, who, missing an arm, missing a leg, was blasted by an IED that he could have taken out the suicide bomber and his senior leadership when he said, hey, I've identified off the intelligence and documentation that we have that this is the person, fits the description, I could take this guy out. They told him they didn't know if they could give him that order. And ultimately, in my opinion, and the way I'm perceiving it is, they basically said, no, you can't shoot that person because the person with him was some sort of asset for the United States government that cannot be compromised. You imagine that, and we're going to hear it. We're going to hear it. And it's part of it's tough to listen to. I mean, this guy, there's a couple parts in the video in this almost 10-minute video where the audio doesn't cut out. He just goes silent and then you hear him sniffling. I mean, this was a Marine sniper, okay, who's done multiple deployments. Badass. And he's going to cry because he's got to be brought back to that day. I can't imagine the survivor's guilt that he might have, or just knowing that he could have prevented 13 of his fellow service members from being blown to bits at that Abbey gate at the airport in Kabul. And there's no way around it. Again, the Biden regime, the DOD, the Joint Chiefs, the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, they all have blood on their hands. And this whole debacle in Afghanistan, what's wild is nobody lost their job. Nobody was reprimanded. There were no suspensions. There were no forced resignations. There were no firings. They actually all patted themselves on the back and said that this was the most successful air evacuation in U.S. history. It's literally what they did. They all got into a big circle and jerked each other off and patted each other on the back and said, hey, we did such a great job. But 13 people got killed in a suicide bombing at an airport where hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people were trying to crowd to get in, you know, literally of suffering from malnutrition and babies literally dying in the crowd. Because we just decided we're going to up and leave Afghanistan. We're going to give them an air base. We're going to give them billions and billions of dollars in equipment. And it's really disturbing. And, I obviously of the opinion, like a lot of you, I'm sure, were disturbed by the whole situation anyway, that this was happening. Like, this shouldn't have been a 20-year war. And we know why we were there. Thanks, George Bush. Like, we knew the real reasons. But there was a better way to evacuate, and everybody agrees. And I've talked to so many people in the military about this, that quick up and out of evacuation, giving those people that helped us for that many years, the interpreters, just giving all these people over to the Taliban and saying, yeah, they'll be okay with them. Everything's fine. Here you go. You know, the money and time wasted there is astronomical, and I'm not even scratching the surface. Because I don't even know everything. And I, you know, I talk to people and I learn something every time I talk to somebody about it. Like, it's just wild. Like, why would we give up an airbase that we built that is in a pretty strategic area of the world that maybe we should hold on to and keep a small force there like we do in so many other places around the country? Oh, which, by the way, you know, this never-ending war in Syria that just nobody talks about. You know, how many Rhino Republicans voted no in removing our service members from Syria? Unfortunately, one of them is my Rhino congressman, new freshman, Anthony D'Esposito, who I at one point considered a friend almost, a good guy who I know. He ends up just being a piece of shit Rhino, and he votes no to bring our service members home. This was a bill that Matt Gaetz brought up on the floor, basically saying we need to bring our service members from Syria home. And Matt Gaetz got more support out of Democrats than he did Republicans for that. And that's something else that's really disturbing, which I'm not really going to get into because I have not looked at all of the facts. I just was looking at the voting and seeing what was going on. But so again, this testimony, it's almost 10 minutes long. We'll see how much we get through. I think it's important. I think a lot of people didn't see this. This happened at the congressional hearing today. And this, again, is the Marine sniper who was identified, the suicide bomber, and demanded pretty much the order to take him out. And nobody wanted to give that order. I don't understand how senior military officers not know, like, what are the rules of engagement when things like this, when there's a credible threat and then you identify the threat and you know you have boots on the ground and you want to protect everybody, whether it's Afghani citizens who are trying to get into the airport and your own brother and sister service members, and nobody wants to pull the trigger. Literally, this guy wanted to, but was told, you know, not to engage because one of the people that was with the suicide bomber looks like was some sort of asset that they said could not be compromised. But this is and there's going to be some silent parts of the audio, a couple seconds here, a couple seconds there, and it's basically he's crying, he's breaking down. So if you're listening, that's why. And I always encourage, if you are listening on audio platforms like Apple or Spotify or iHeartRadio, go back and watch the videos of the episode on Rumble over at 1776live.tv so you can get the full comprehension of what's going on when we play videos on the show. But yeah, okay, so let's take a listen.
Good morning, Chairman, Ranking Member Meeks, and members of Congress. Thank you for inviting me to speak to you all about my Marine Corps Scout Sniper Team's experience during the evacuation in Kabul, Afghanistan. This is my perspective. This is my account and not the DOD's. I'm Sergeant Tyler Justin Vargas Andrews. I'm 25 years old and from Northern California, a professionally instructed gunman and radio operator for my team. My sniper team was Reaper 2, part of Victor 2-1 Weapons Company, attached to Echo Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines from Camp Pendleton, California. In June of 2021, after having just left Kuwait, we were deployed to Saudi Arabia as a show of force. We practiced a few small-scale non-combatant evacuation operations in the event we were needed in Afghanistan. August came, and 2 weeks later, we left for Kabul. Reaper 2 and Echo Company had a close relationship with the colonel of the Special Purpose Marine Air Ground Task Force. He kept us informed of the situation on the ground in Afghanistan, and we were ready to go, so we thought. An infantry platoon of roughly 40 Marines and my assistant team leader left for Kabul on August 15th. They eventually faced the Afghan civilian crowd that overran the Hamid Karzai International Airport. The rest of us arrived on August 16th. All the Marines linked up and staged inside a gym in Ichkaya, not far from the airfield. We connected with our command and received our first mission later that night. From August 17th to the 18th, we surveilled and reported on Taliban activity from the top platform of satellite tower near the civilian airport terminals in Ichkaya. We reconnected with another sniper team and moved back towards our staging area that night. Our team traveled to Abbey Gate Forward in the afternoon of the 19th and set up a position in the tower as Marines in riot gear were sent through the crowd to cordon off a couple hundred people as we tried to begin some form of processing. Hundreds of people came in waves surging through the gate multiple times, physically fighting us. Living out of our tower, we conducted 24/7 operations at the gate. The next 7 days were surreal. Nothing prepared us for the ground experience we were about to encounter. It was chaos, but we worked together to figure out the next best steps. Tens of thousands of people descended upon Abbey Gate. We were looking for anyone with a blue passport, first and foremost. People were suffering from extreme malnutrition, dehydration, heat casualties, and infants were dying. Afghans were brutalized and tortured by the Taliban, flocked to us pleading for help. Some Afghans turned away from Ichkaya, tried to kill themselves on the razor wire in front of us that we used as a deterrent. They thought this was merciful compared to the Taliban torture that they faced. Countless Afghans were murdered by the Taliban 155 yards in front of our position day and night. With only shipping containers between us, the Taliban would routinely murder people under our observation at their checkpoint. We communicated the atrocities to our chain of command and intel assets, but nothing came of it. The troops on the ground had to tirelessly work to control the crowds day and night. Department of State staff in Ichkaya would completely shut down processing Afghans every evening and into the morning, leaving ground forces with a nightmare. They did not work in reasonable rotations and very much presented an unwillingness to work in other situations as well. No matter our health or condition, the Marines stood watch and engaged in disorderly and dangerous crowds. State was not prepared to be in Ichkaya. In fact, state would not want to deal with the Afghans unable to be processed, weakening the security of the perimeter. State would take us away from our mission to walk Afghans out to meet the fate of the Taliban, condemning them to death. The Taliban grew in numbers and strengthened their position around Ichkaya with gun trucks while having occasional visits by Taliban leadership. On August 22nd, an improvised explosive device, IED, probe took place down the canal running along the perimeter of Ichkaya. This was ISIS or the Taliban performing an IED test run. We reported this to our chain of command. Days later, we received word to be on the lookout for two vehicle-borne IEDs, described as a gold or white Corolla and a green Mazda convertible. Around 2 a.m. on August 26th, intel guys confirmed the suicide bomber in the vicinity of and nearing Abbey Gate, described as clean-shaven, brown-dressed, black vest, and traveling with an older companion. I asked the intel guys why he wasn't apprehended sooner since we had a full description. I was told the asset could not be compromised. Throughout the entirety of the day on August 26, 2021, we disseminated the suicide bomber information to ground forces at Abbey Gate. He was spotted somewhere from noon to 1 p.m. by myself, then Sergeant Charles Schilling, and another. The anomaly in the crowd, who was clean-shaven and fit the description exactly, traveling with an older gentleman. The individual was consistently and nervously looking up at our position through the crowd. The older of the two wore a black silky hijab that was covering his face most of the time. They both had obvious mannerisms that go along with who we believed him to be. They handed out small cards to the crowd periodically, and the older man sat calmly and seemingly coached the bomber. Over the communication network, we passed that there was a potential threat and an IED attack imminent. This was as serious as it could get. I requested engagement authority while my team leader was ready on the M110 semi-automatic sniper system. The response, leadership did not have the engagement authority for us. Do not engage. I requested for the battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Brad Whited, to come to the tower to see what we did. While we waited for him, psychological operations individuals came to our tower immediately and confirmed the suspect met the suicide bomber description. He eventually arrived and we showed him our evidence, the photos we had of the two men. We reassured him of the ease of fire on the suicide bomber. Pointedly, we asked him for engagement authority and permission. We asked him if we could shoot. Our battalion commander said, and I quote, "I don't know," end quote. Myself and my team leader asked very harshly, "Well, who does? Because this is your responsibility, sir." He again replied, he did not know, but would find out. We received no update and never got our answer. Eventually, the individual disappeared. To this day, we believe he was a suicide bomber. We made everyone on the ground aware. Operations had briefly halted, but then started again. Plain and simple, we were ignored. Our expertise was disregarded. No one was held accountable for our safety. About 1730, Staff Sergeant Darren Hoover, friend and mentor. Came to get me from the tower to go help find an Afghan interpreter in the crowd.
This is where it gets rough for him. Can't imagine how he's feeling. 25 years old, this guy. And nobody seems to care.
We found the interpreter and his brother, born with American passports. They told us of five family members still in the canal. I stayed there waiting for the family members standing against a 2-foot canal wall. 10 minutes passed. Then a flash and a massive wave of pressure. I'm thrown 12 feet onto the ground, but instantly knew what had happened. I opened my eyes to Marines dead or unconscious lying around me.
I bet the DOD didn't even watch this testimony.
A crowd of hundreds immediately vanished in front of me, and my body was catastrophically wounded with 100 to 150 ball bearings now in it. Almost immediately, we started taking fire from the neighborhood, and I saw how injured I was with my right arm, completely shredded and unusable. I saw my lower abdomen soaked in blood. I crawled backwards roughly seven feet because I thought I was still in harm's way. My body was overwhelmed from the trauma of the blast. My abdomen had been ripped open. Every inch of my exposed body, except for my face, took ball bearings and shrapnel. I tried to get up but could not. Laying there for a few minutes, I started to lose consciousness when I heard Chaz, my team leader, screaming my name as he ran to me. His voice calling to me kept me awake.
It's tough.
When he got to me, he dragged me to safety and immediately started triaging me, tying tourniquets on my limbs and doing anything he could to stop the bleeding and start plugging wounds with the help of the other Marines. I was awake through most of it, screaming, moaning, and cursing. I ask you to please ask me about getting shot at the tower in Abbey Gate and how no one wanted my report post-blast. Even NCIS and the FBI failed to interview me. Ask me to elaborate on my ordeal post-blast and ask me about this one little girl and her family that I reunited. Our military members and veterans deserve our best because that is what we give to America.
Yep.
The withdrawal was a catastrophe, in my opinion. And there was an inexcusable lack of accountability and negligence.
Fact.
The 11 Marines, one sailor, and one soldier that were murdered that day have not been answered for.
Nope.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak.
It's deep. It's deep, but it's real. And just think about the guy for a minute. This guy, Marine Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews. I don't really know much about him. I don't know where he's from. It seems he's 25 years old. That blast took his leg. It took his arm. Completely, I'm sure, destroyed him mentally. Completely disabled him at such a young age. I mean, he's a kid. I'm 43 years old. 25. He's a kid, and he's... I mean, you want to talk about an American hero and a patriot. And that's the definition of it right there. That's the epitome of it. And this guy went through all of that and was ignored. He just said it himself, FBI and the NCIS, the Naval Crime Intelligence, crime investigations, they didn't even interview him after it all happened. The guy's got 150 ball bearings in his body. You figure they'd want a statement from him. Hey, what happened? You're a witness. Maybe they don't want any of that on record. Well, now it's on congressional hearing record that he identified the suicide bomber. He was ignored. He was told not to engage. He asked why this clean-shaven, standout-in-the-crowd individual who was identified as the suicide bomber and the older companion that he was with, why were they not apprehended before if they had identified him? And the answer was because that older companion was some sort of asset that could not be compromised, basically identified. And instead, they let all of this happen and ignored everything. And 13 killed. And how many injured? He's one of them. I mean, maimed. The guy's fucked for life. And if he can't handle the cursing, too bad. It's completely fucked for life, this guy. On all levels. But this is somebody, this Tyler Vargas Andrews, this Marine sniper, is somebody who I hope one day will be a member of Congress, or I hope one day will be a senator or something in politics to get on that bandwagon of holding people accountable. Because just like he said, these 13 people that were killed, nobody's answered for that. Nobody's answered for that. And nobody in bureaucratic bullshit government gives a shit about those 13 heroes that were killed, that weren't getting rich by protecting our country. And again, what do we do? What do we do for our military and our veterans besides cut their pay and make them do all sorts of ridiculous bullshit and force all kinds of woke nonsense down their throats now? What are we doing for them? We treat them like trash, and they deserve our very best because that's what they give us and our freedom. They give it their very best and fight for it. I just can't get over just when it really sits in when you say, wow, this guy's 25 years old. But then you look at all of the at the service members that were killed. They were all young. Young, middle age, doesn't matter. Matters that this could have been avoided, and because of bureaucratic bullshit, government bureaucracy killed 13 service members and maimed however many more on August 26, 2021. And nobody lost their job. Nobody's answered for it. Nobody's been held accountable. What are we supposed to think as Americans? Now, hearing from this guy, what are we supposed to think? You know, I say this a lot, like we yearn to trust our government. We want to, but we can't. We know we can't because the government can't be trusted. And the reason the government can't be trusted is because of all of the bureaucrats that can't be fired because they're entrenched in government. I'm not even talking about the politicians, because if you really break it down, the people that we elect, they're not in power. Think about this. And I said it yesterday a little bit, talking about Schedule F and how Donald Trump would like to fire every bureaucrat appointee that's entrenched in these government agencies that have a lot of clout and power in crafting policy and pressuring politicians then to, you know, get it through, because a lot of these bureaucrats feel, well, I'm here. You know, congressmen and senators come and go, presidents come and go, but I'm here. So I'm more important than them. And they're not accountable to us, the voters. So, like, what are we doing? We can vote in the best candidates who have the best talking points, who have the best campaign strategy, who have the best campaign promises and can deliver on certain things. But when we break it down, what does it all mean when we have all of these fucked up bureaucrats that run the show? And that's where the deep state comes in. The deep state really, in my opinion, the deep state is not the elected politicians. They're just complicit in it because they're controlled by the deep state bureaucrats that are entrenched in there. And we don't even know who these people are. You know, they collect paychecks. They're appointed, or, you know, they got hired, whatever it might be, and have been there forever. And know the ins and outs more and how the government really works more than the people that we elect in Congress for 2 years and Senate for 6 years, or the presidency for 4 to 8 years. They're temporary employees of the government. When these people, no, we're here. We're permanent employees until they retire, and accountable to nobody. Yeah, you know, Dr. Fauci is just scratching the surface. You know, he was the highest paid government employee, but I'm not even talking about big, high, powerful paid employees. I'm just talking about the groups of people that make up these cabals in government bureaucracy. That's the real problem. So how do we fix that? We get people in that can get rid of these people and get that Schedule F bill passed, a Schedule F law passed, where the government, where the sitting president can fire certain people who should not be involved in policymaking, but really are involved in policymaking behind the scenes, with special interest groups and political action committees and the bureaucrats and everything else. It's one big, giant, sick, deep state cabal. And I'd hate, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom here, but we're not destroying it. Can we pick away at it? Sure, absolutely. It's not going to get, you know, the country's not going to get saved in 4 years from bureaucratic bullshit. I mean, just bureaucracy killed JFK. Bureaucracy has done so much damage and destruction and division in our country. And here we have this 25-year-old hero that could have saved 13 people and himself from being maimed for life. And because of bureaucracy, it was not allowed to happen. An asset could not be compromised. And again, I say the Biden regime, Secretary Lloyd Austin, the DOD, the Joint Chiefs, all of them, blood on their hands. I mean, all of the Joint Chiefs should have been fired. The Secretary of Defense should have been forced to resign. All the senior leadership over at the DOD, the State Department, just clear house. And this is unacceptable. Someone has to be held accountable. The American people deserve it. The family members of these 13 service members that were brutally killed, blown up to pieces, blood and guts everywhere. Those family members need to be able to hold someone accountable. And this is the problem. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful. It's absolutely 100% criminal. People should be hanging, literally, tie the nooses. People should be hanging for allowing this to happen. Just like people should be hanging for the treason of allowing what's happening to Americans and that we call January 6th defendants now, which Kevin McCarthy gave an interview to Breitbart, which I have. We're gonna get into this too. Now, I did not watch the whole tape. I did not watch the whole interview, but the House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, who I'm not a fan of, if you listen to me, you know that, yesterday told Breitbart that he intends to fully release to the public the tens of thousands of hours of U.S. Capitol surveillance from January 6th. He did say that in an interview. So now, if you didn't hear it, you're about to. But this is someone we need to hold accountable, because he gave this, and it's like a 7-minute interview. We're going to watch it because we've been saying it, that these, I was like 40,000 hours of January 6th surveillance footage should be accessible to the American people, because it's the people's house. We pay for it. We pay for the security cameras. That footage belongs to the American people, and it needs to be accessible on some sort of public website where everybody can see it. It needs to be given to every media outlet. It needs to be given to the January 6th defense teams, and it also needs to be given to the January 6th prosecution teams. It needs to be given to everybody. And then we can make some real judgments, because based off the footage I saw, and of course, again, even more so today, the left-leaning, the legacy BS news actors are all spinning it and calling Tucker Carlson a propagandist, a liar. Whoopi Goldberg wants him arrested for recruiting and radicalizing people. I mean, it's so wild. It really is wild. So this is the Kevin McCarthy interview with Breitbart. Hopefully the sound is good. And let's give this a listen.
Arguably the biggest story of the year so far, and the media, who are all lined up outside this room right now trying to get a question with you, the establishment media are freaking out about this. Your decision to release the January 6th surveillance tapes here from the Capitol to Tucker Carlson. Can you tell us why you made that decision? What was the thinking behind it? What do you think it showed?
Well, this is all about transparency, and it won't just be to Tucker. Like any news organization, different people get exclusives. We watched during the January 6th, CNN would have exclusives all the time, and nobody complained. CNN actually got to be in the statuary hall for a whole hour for their own show. You've watched that January 6th would release only certain tapes. I think it's better for transparency that anyone can make their own decision up. And as we walk through, these are many more hours of tapes than the January 6th committee told us. It's not 14,000, it's 42,000 hours. We want to make sure for security purposes,
hours.
Or certain exits aren't.
Oh, of course, of course, of course, of course, Breitbart. Because it's on Breitbart website, they have to throw an ad in. I didn't realize that was going to happen. It usually doesn't. And I don't think there's a way to fast forward it. Look, they throw a 22-second ad in. I'm going to just mute that and let that play. But so far, we have that that's 42,000 hours of tape. All right, 42,000 hours. It needs to all be released. And it sounds like he's going to do it. And it sounds like he's going to give it to all media outlets if they request it. But, you know, we're going to go ahead and see where it goes. So let's, sorry about that. Of course, they got to get you here.
Most interesting thing, when I sat down, when I had the team talk to the Capitol Police about making sure they had no problems with the exit is showing, they said January 6th never asked them that. They showed the exit of the vice president. They showed the exit from my office. They literally had then Speaker Pelosi's daughter showing the secure location that they take the leadership. That's not supposed to be known to anybody. And CNN reported it. And I don't remember the press ever getting upset with that. So what we want to do is make sure we have this out that everybody can see it.
As Tucker Carlson rolled out several of these tapes, he made a very compelling case that the January 6th committee lied to the American public, the Democrat-run committee.
They did.
I know you've been very critical of. What do you think? Do you think the January 6th committee lied to the public? Do you think that these tapes show that?
Well, I think I haven't been able to see all the tapes yet. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I did know, there were certain things the January 6th committee did that I knew was purely political. First, not letting Republicans on the committee. Secondly, they made accusations that we knew were not true. They said one Republican congressman gave a tour. Well, the tapes show he did not give a tour. But you know what?
So they lied.
The Democrats on the January 6th committee did give a tour in the Capitol the day before. We watched different accusations they made. That's why I think transparency answers all that. That's not my job to sit back and say whether they were right or wrong, but my job is to be transparent and people can make their own conclusion.
One of the really compelling tapes is shows the what they call the QAnon shaman or whatever, right? Like the guy who was dressed up in
Navy veteran
really funky garb,
escorted around
the Capitol with police officers, taking him around to various doors and trying to even unlock a couple doors for him and take him into the Senate chamber. There's all sorts of other stuff that maybe contradicts some of the official narrative that's out there. Do you think that this may change the outcomes of, say, several of these convictions
it
of
should.
These people? Do you think that
but not in D.C.
maybe this is exculpatory evidence for some of the people that
I'm not sure, but anybody that's been held for trial, they should be able to have the ability to see the tapes. They should be able to use the tapes. I don't know if he was able to use the tapes or
not.
But I also believe in America, you need equal justice. I watched what transpired in America, the burning of courthouses. Look, I don't condone anything that
happened. That's all okay.
I don't like what happened.
That's okay. It's mostly peaceful.
Right.
But I watched the courthouses get burned in Seattle. I watched them attack federal employees. I watched what happened here. And no one getting arrested, no one being held up to justice. I think in America, you want equal justice. And that's what's concerning to me.
Nobody gets
that,
though, anymore.
Do you think there's anything in there that might lead to, you know, any of these convictions being vacated or people getting pardoned or something down the road?
I have not been able. There's 48,000 tapes. I haven't gone through them, so I don't know. But I leave that up to the justice system. But the one thing I will say is, to be fair and equal justice, if there's any person that's accused, they should be able to have a right to see the tapes to make their own defense.
A couple more things on this, because I think it's important. So you're right that the establishment media freaking out about Tucker Carlson getting the first look at this are...
They want him arrested for radicalizing people.
From the January 6th committee during that whole process.
We'll be the hut.
Do you intend to release these tapes publicly after you go through and remove anything?
Yeah, we just want to make sure we go through them all. And it takes time. And, you know, with Tucker, he just saw a few. It didn't like we released all
so
the tapes.
So 5 years from now.
Right.
And the first thing that Tucker said, too, he didn't want to show any exits to cause any problems. We asked the Capitol Police, were there any concerns? They came back with one, and we mediated that. But it was interesting, that one that they had a problem with, Eric Swalwell had up on the internet for the last 2 years showing that part.
In addition to that, do you envision any repercussions for maybe some of the January 6th committee members like a Liz Cheney or an Adam Kinzinger or Benny Thompson or other ones that maybe provided misinformation that some of these tapes show that
they're allowed to?
No, you know, Adam and Liz are no longer here. What's interesting is that Pelosi would even appoint Thompson for this committee. Mm-hmm. Remember, he objected to the presidential election and then points here. And then the one thing that Benny said at the very beginning is Nancy Pelosi is off limits. We can't, and the sergeant of arms, so we can't know about those emails or texts or those
conversations.
So there's
no transparency.
I've really taken the approach that the Capitol Police weren't protected that day, that they weren't given the information ahead of time. Should you have had National Guard here? What information do you have? I was never told of any threats beforehand. And you would not ever want to have that security problem happen again. So you want to look at it from a security point of view to why did it happen and how do you make sure that never happens again? And to me, it's quite interesting that the January 6th never laid that out.
So the last thing on this is that your counterpart in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, the Democrat Senate leader, majority leader,
Chucky Jerkoff.
His reaction to this was he called for Rupert Murdoch and Fox News as a channel to censor Tucker Carlson. We see push for more censorship from the left all the time. That's their answer to
we can't have
What's
the truth out there.
Chuck Schumer trying to keep the information from the public.
I wish Chuck Schumer would read the Constitution. The Democrats always go to censorship. You watched what they did with the laptop. You watched what they did with Twitter. And they want to use government as much as they can to censure what people can see and what people can know. This is
all right. So And first, Kevin McCarthy says he wasn't notified of any credible threats, which I don't have any reason to doubt that. Nancy Pelosi knew. First of all, the FBI and the Capitol Police, it was proven that they knew of credible threats, and they didn't tell anybody. They kept it to themselves. Or did they? Who did they tell? They told the Nancy Pelosi's, right? So will we eventually see all the January 6th video footage? The way he makes it sound is yes, but it's going to take time. Whatever it was, 48,000 hours of video. And again, you literally have just calls for Fox to fire Tucker Carlson. The DOJ should investigate Fox News for telling lies. What lies did Tucker Carlson tell? He played video. You can see it. Wasn't deceptive editing. You can see what was going on. If Tucker Carlson did not say a word during the show and just played the videos that they played, you can still interpret and take away from that that there were lies told. There was bullshit flying everywhere, that the guy with the stupid buffalo headdress was not, but they were escorting him through the building, checking doors for him. He's walking by 10 Capitol cops. They're looking at this guy like he's dressed ridiculous, but hey, he's just walking through the Capitol. Nobody's doing anything. It's all a scam. The January 6th committee did absolutely nothing but provide political theater to make Republicans, conservatives, MAGA Republicans, America First Republicans, whatever the hell you want to call yourself, look very bad as a whole. And literally Joe Biden standing behind podiums saying this all had to do with white supremacy. They're all given their sheets to read off of. And we're over here just, hey, can you tell us? Can you tell us what really happened? And will this help defenses? Will this help prosecutions? January 6th in court. Again, we're dealing with the DC court system. They're corrupt, meaning no conservative or Republican or anybody is going to get a fair trial. But, you know, there are, I believe, judges that are saying that the video release can be used by defense attorneys. I think a judge or two saying no, it cannot, which is complete bullshit because it's evidence, of what happened that day. So is any of that, any of these appeals going to end up at the Supreme Court? Like I mentioned yesterday, presidential election, if Donald Trump does become president, will he have a list ready to go? I believe he will, of people to pardon. There are probably people who are charged with violence that don't deserve pardons, but for the most part, with these people walking through the Capitol and charged with obstructing a official proceeding and trespassing and no violence whatsoever, not even criminal mischief or any destruction of anything, destruction of property. Yeah, there should be pardons all around. I mean, that guy, the QAnon shaman, whatever the hell they're calling him, Navy veteran, dressed like an idiot, walked around the Capitol, I think chanted a few things, broke nothing, broke absolutely nothing, gave nobody a problem, and they focused in on him because of the way he was dressed and then threw him in jail and then in prison. I mean, for nothing, for absolutely nothing. Well, he shouldn't have been there. Well, maybe, but he was allowed in. He wasn't stopped. He wasn't tackled. He wasn't tased. He wasn't killed in cold blood like Ashley Babbitt was by some failure of a Capitol Police officer, which, again, they gave a gold medal to. They gave a gold medal to the piece of shit Capitol Police officer who has a history of leaving his loaded weapon unattended and other things. They promoted him and they gave him a gold medal because he shot an unarmed Air Force veteran, Ashley Babbitt, that was of no threat to him. She was behind two closed doors, and he shot her from behind a closed door, shot her down like an animal, and then lied and said that police officer Brian Sicknick was killed in the line of duty, and his head was bashed in with a fire extinguisher at the Capitol riots but that wasn't the case. He died of a stroke days later after he had seen his brother, and he was absolutely fine. It's all a big pile of bullshit, and we can't not keep talking. We have to keep talking about it. We have to, from the Afghanistan debacle, now that we have this Marine Sergeant, Tyler Vargas Andrews, there has to be accountability, especially for those families. This January 6th footage, and hopefully more to come out. I'm sure that we're not hearing the end of this. I'm sure there's going to be more. We need accountability there. I'm hoping House Republicans are really going to get down to the bottom of things. I really liked what happened today in the congressional hearing with this Marine sniper. We need more of that. We need all of this out in the open. And not just for political theater either. We need people to be held accountable. We need impeachments of the Secretary of Homeland Security. I would say get rid of Secretary Lloyd Austin, Defense Secretary, should have been gone a long time ago. Okay. Merrick Garland weaponizing the DOJ needs to go. Joe Biden ain't going anywhere. Let's face it. We need to chip away at all these other nefarious scumbags. Last thing I wanted to get into quick. So four Americans go to Mexico. Foolishly, I might add. Doesn't matter. You're free to travel any way you want, right? Knowing Mexico is, especially certain parts of it, is a somewhat dangerous place. Case in point, I had a family member. So these four Americans, one of them wanted to go get a tummy tuck, found a doctor in Mexico. Why, I don't know. Must have been dirt cheap. That's the only thing I could think of. I think they came from Atlanta, Georgia. Correct me if I'm wrong. And went to Mexico and ended up in a really bad part that is completely run and governed by cartels, and they were kidnapped. Two of them end up dead, probably executed. One of them shot, one of them alive, okay? So a simple road trip with friends who are going to support this person, getting a tummy tuck from a doctor in Mexico at a good price, lives are shattered forever, okay? I had a friend a few years back, wanted to get a medical procedure. Found a doctor in Mexico, right over the border. I was doing research, and I'm like, yeah, this area, I forgot the area there was. It was right over the border by Brownsville, Texas, and then right over the border. And it just didn't look right. And I was asking a few people that knew the area, and they says, yeah, that's all cartel territory. You go there, and you even look like you have money, you're probably going to have a problem. And I'm telling this person, you can't go. You can't go. You find somebody here to do the same thing. You might pay a little bit more, but you're going to be alive. Okay? You're not going to end up in a ditch or anything else. Thank God they listened, because then you see stories like this. And listen, this should have happened a long time ago, but there are GOP representatives that want to push legislation. It's amazing this has to happen, to categorize Mexican cartels as terrorist groups, because that's what they are. If this, I believe, truly, if this would have happened, if Trump was president, I believe they would have already drone missiled most of any cartel assets that they could find. Because they, let's face it, our government intelligence agencies know where and how the cartels operate. They know, and they allow it. They allow them to operate there. They allow them to operate here. Mexican government is not going to do anything to protect Americans. It's time for against drug cartels. And it's time that we do. We had four Americans go, two got executed. They were kidnapped in broad daylight, murdered. I'm shocked that two of them got away. I'm shocked that two of them were allowed to live. Shocked. I thought that they would have grabbed them and tried to get some sort of ransom from family and not have just executed them right away. Who knows what the situation was? But there was a friend of this victim who came out. His name is Zindel Brown. And he warned them before the trip. There's actually him and another a sister of one of the men killed. They said that traveling to Mexico was a bad idea. and that, you know, bad things happened there. And it fell on deaf ears. And what's crazy is, the woman, I think she's a mother of six, and she was the one going to undergo a tummy tuck. And I'm not sure if she was one of the ones, who were killed. One man was shot and two others died after accompanying. I honestly don't know. I'm actually looking now to see if I could see it. The friends kept saying we shouldn't go down. We shouldn't go down. They were sad. They shot at the car. They got him. And this all happened in broad daylight. And it was... It's bad, but so now you can't, me as an American, I have no desire to go to any other country right now. I don't. First of all, we're a laughing stock of the world. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't care if it's a great vacation destination. I don't care. I don't want to go. I don't want my family to go. I'm happy here in the United States. There's plenty to do here. I don't need to travel. And I certainly wouldn't go to Mexico for a medical procedure. It's a shame what happened to these people. I wish they would have listened to their loved ones, but they didn't. And it's a shame. And yet, Senator Tom Cotton, he's calling on military action against the Mexican cartels. Donald Trump wanted to do it. It needs to happen. It's not going to happen. Let's face it. It's not going to happen. They're going to be allowed to continue to operate and make billions and billions of dollars. Joe Biden has constructed a great economy for them, and that's going to keep happening until we have Donald Trump back in the Oval Office in 2024, in the hopes that that's one of the things he does. Because if I was him, if I was the president and Americans got killed by the cartels, that would have been it. Nightfall would have happened and drones would have been flying and Mexican cartel bases would be in ruins and Mexican cartel members executed where they stand. Brains in the street. Done. Full stop. No more bullshit. And that's what should have happened a long time ago. They are killing Americans by bringing all the fentanyl, all the and many other drugs too. It's not just fentanyl. Bringing all the drugs, and then we have people bringing guns from America into Mexico and money. It's a vicious cycle and it's a billion-dollar business. We are condoning it. We are financing it with our money, whether we like it or not. It's happening. And nothing is being done about it. Before we wrap up, I kind of on a lighter note, I mean, we listened to that Marine Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews for almost 10 minutes, and it's horrifying. It really hurt to listen to him. So I want to play. So this is some of the video from January 6th that Tucker released, but it's great because it's a voiceover and it's just, I got a real laugh out of it. This is probably the best narration of January 6th video yet. And I want to play it for you before we wrap up. So here we go.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the U.S. Capitol building. If you've joined us today for the insurrection, please make sure you pick up a promotional leaflet on the way in, stay inside the safety cordons at all times. And if you get lost, speak to one of our Capitol Police officers. They'll be sure
to point
you in the right direction.
Look, just sightseeing. It's so dangerous. It's so dangerous and bad.
And be sure to set aside a little time today to join us for some insurrection activities, including our photography tour, our fancy dress competition,
come on,
and have a go on our climbing wall. But don't forget those safety ropes.
Look at him.
And I've now received the results of our fancy dress competition. The winner today is Jacob Chansley. That's Mr. Jacob Chansley. If you could report to your
there he is, Buffalo man, Jacob Chansley.
Sure to give you your prize.
Look at him just walking around of the building with his flag. Capitol Police escorting him. Look, yeah, we'll go this way. Look at him. Why aren't they tackling him down? Big insurrectionist.
And all that's left is for me to thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the insurrection. Wherever possible, please try to clean up after yourselves.
You guys picking up
some souvenir shop on the way out, and feel free to join us on the outdoor terrace for Nancy Pelosi's insurrection soiree. Grab yourself a light refreshment and enjoy the music of our very own fancy dress.
There he is, big insurrectionist. You can't make this up. Oh my God, you can't make this up. You really can't. It's just, it's amazing. Literally tourists walking around. Granted, some people were doing some bad things there. I mean, there was violence. Let's face it. But that's the only part that they showed strictly for political reasons. That's it. We have to spin the narrative this way. So we have to deceptive edit, and we have to select what we're going to show and what we're not. And we have to make sure the mainstream media is doing the same thing. And that's what they did. All right, listen, everybody. There'll be no Freedom Friday tomorrow. I have an engagement. I'll be back on Tuesday with James Curry, that bearded, not very good looking co-host of mine on We the People Radio on Tuesday. But we will be back for Freedom Friday next week, and we will have Joey Lynn and Robert Maceros. You've probably seen them around. That's the couple that's being sued by the Biden administration for that KKK act because they were in a Trump motorcade and the people in the Biden campaign bus were scared of them. And they're suing them, and they were just told that their case is not dismissed and that it's going to be going to trial in December. We're going to get an update from them. They are great people out of Texas. We're going to have them on Freedom Friday next week. And then, again, James and I will be back Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, We the People Radio right here. So I'm glad you all joined tonight. And enjoy the weekend. Tomorrow's Friday. We got the weekend. Enjoy it. Hope you're all doing great things. Remember, follow the Rumble channel, 1776live.tv. I'm back on Twitter, out of Twitter jail. Alan Jacoby, 1776. Follow me, tweet me. I usually always respond. If I know you're, I have to vet now my responses. I have to be careful because people report me. I have to be careful what I say. But yeah, and I'm over on Truth Social, the Great Divide podcast. Truth Social's all right. The algorithm's all wonky. And, yeah, you can get me on Instagram, too. My Instagram is also 1776live.tv, but that's the actual domain for the Rumble channel. Really easy to find. Hit the follow. If you don't have a Rumble channel, you should. Get away from Facebook for live streaming. Get away from YouTube. Get on Rumble. So many great shows on there. You can get on there. You can chat. It's free, and it's better than YouTube. So get over to Rumble, 1776live.tv. All right, everybody, until Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. I'll talk to you soon.